brought to life. He was warm, he came around like he was dignified.
Back on Downtown 434 on your Thursday afternoon, Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell here with you. Our next guest on the program has been appearing on the stages off-Broadway, on Broadway, and all around the country in a number of terrific roles. Right now, she is appearing at the Ogunquit Playhouse in Stephen Sondheim's A Little Night Music. We're thrilled to be joined on the program this afternoon by Julia Murney. Welcome to Maine. It's so great to have you performing at Ogunquit Playhouse.
It is so great to be performing at Ogunquit Playhouse.
This is such a remarkable show, and your character, I mean, one of the greats of musical theater. What's the attraction to playing Desiree?
The attraction is manyfold, one of which is that this show is not done all that often in the Sondheim, as the Sondheim canon goes. This is not one of the, and certainly not in a summer stock kind of a way. And it's partially because it's really hard to put this show up in 2 weeks, to rehearse it for 2 weeks and have it open. It's very dense. It's hard, which makes it incredibly satisfying once you actually know it. It takes a minute for your brain to go, what are you doing? But it's been, I've never done the show before. It's been so satisfying to get to do this show and to do it at a theater like Ogunquit Playhouse that is so, their staff, their crew, their production values are all really top-notch. And it helps make your job easier when all that is happening around you, for sure.
Well, for anybody who doesn't know, she is an actress who has certainly had great success, but when we meet her, safe to say, she's not quite living the glamorous life.
Bless her heart. she's a successful actress who is a bit of a star in a way, but it's just kind of the grind of it is starting to wear at her. And I think she is generally a satisfied person, but an old love of hers turns up again and makes her start questioning a lot. And she doesn't, part of what I love about her is that it's not an either or. It's not a, well, can I be with this man and then be a little wife and have the life of my dreams? That's not her dream in life. Her dream is to have all of this. And that's what she's trying to figure out how to do. But I think my favorite part of her is she knows that whatever happens, she's going to be all right. She's a grown woman. You know, she knows. And it'll be okay.
And it has these questions about love, but also a somewhat fraught relationship with both her mother and her daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I like to say that she and her mother are really cut from the same cloth, but the cloth has two completely different patterns on it. One pattern is her mother's and one pattern is hers, and they don't match really, but they operate the same just from different generations.
And then all the strands of love and life come together in Act Two with everyone under the same roof.
So much love and life. Yes, it's kind of like a bubbly glass of champagne, and on top of every bubble is someone else bobbing up to the surface to sort of touch on their story and their love life, and then someone else pops up, and it just keeps bubbling up.
And you get to sing what I think is one of the great songs in the American Theater Songbook, Send in the Clowns.
I do get to sing Send in the Clowns. Isn't that crazy? it's something to sing a song that, you know, this show was written back in a time when show tunes got re-recorded by pop singers and often got on the radio. That doesn't really happen very much anymore, but it did back then, and certainly Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and many, many people did those kinds of things for years. And I think Send in the Clowns got recorded by a lot of people. I think that Judy Collins is probably the most famous.
Right, but didn't Sondheim write it really to match the range of Glynis Johns?
Correct. And she did not have a huge range. For those of you who don't know who Glynis Johns was, she's best known as the mother in the movie Mary Poppins.
right.
And so if you think of her voice, she didn't have a wide range at all. And so it's an acting song, really. And then when a pop singer takes it, they can do whatever they want to it, obviously, and make it something else. But what I love about it, about the song, is that knowing it in the context of the show, I've had several people say to me, I did not know the context of the song, and it changed it for me. Now, like, I understand it, and that is a huge compliment, to feel like, oh, I helped them see the song for what it is, as opposed to what it's become over these many, many years.
Right.
Which is almost like elevator music in a way, because it's become like after a while, when everybody sings it, it loses a little bit of impact. But it's really a gorgeous song.
We had a chance to talk with Kathleen Turner a couple of days ago. What has that been like working with her?
Oh my goodness. You know, you walk in the first day of rehearsal and you know she's going to be there, but then she's there and you're like, oh, that's Kathleen Turner, you guys. She's right there. She's right over there. And our director, Hunter Foster, is a very old friend of mine. And when we were in rehearsal one night, he and I were texting about something. And he said, I have to tell you that today in rehearsal, all I could think of at one moment was Julia is doing a scene with Kathleen Turner. He just kept saying it over and over in his head. I mean, it's wild. She's an icon. She's a legend. As the kids say, she's the moment. And given that, you kind of don't know what to expect. You don't know what her feelings may be about being in a room of strangers and all that kind of stuff, and whatever behavior that might elicit. And instead of anything untoward, she is the most open, cool, game. She's just awesome. You look her in the eyes and you go, my gosh, she's this movie star that I've known who she was my whole life. Is really thrilling.
We're talking with Julia Murney here on Downtown. Now you've done Sondheim before. You played Sarah Jane Moore in Assassin. So what is it that makes Stephen Sondheim's music so special and such a thrill to perform? Or a challenge, as the case may be. I'm a high school theater director, and I know that this can be intimidating work to get involved with, too, sometimes.
It is highly intimidating. It definitely is. And you know, I'm sure you see this with your kids, like when you give them something that is a challenge, like a real challenge, it can be sort of teeth-gnashing to get it right, to figure it out and learn it and all that stuff. The satisfaction when you do get it right is very keen. The biggest satisfaction is when you're able to sing in this show, for example. Like, I'm lucky. I don't have most of the songs in this show go by at a breakneck speed. Mm. They're very wordy. They're incredibly, they require agile actors who not only can sing the note and say the words, but also interpret them and bring them out to the audience. And so there's already a satisfaction when you finish the song. Like, whew, I did it. But the biggest satisfaction is understanding and you can feel it. You really can. When you feel that the audience is following with you, as opposed to feeling almost aggressed against with all of those lyrics, they can feel like they want to hear what you're saying. And that's what I have found with these audiences here, is that they totally get on the ride with us. And this is a dense show. It's not a short show, but it's so, I think, so beautiful. And so filled with love and bubbles, and it's really satisfying to feel them on the ride with us.
Well, you have done so much wonderful work throughout your career. You originated the role of Queenie in Andrew Lippa's The Wild Party. How did you two, or when did you two know that this was a special kind of relationship?
Actually, the day we met was when we knew. I met him at an audition for a show that was written by Stephen Schwartz, who had written, at that point, Godspell, and he went on to write Wicked, and among 100 other things. Mm-hmm. But I knew who he was because he had written Godspell, and that's how I had gotten my union card, just doing a production of Godspell. And so I went to this audition hoping that he might be there because he's Stephen Schwartz, and he was. And we met, and I sang my song, and then Stephen Schwartz asked me to sing another song of his, but they didn't have the sheet music, so he turned to the music director, who has a brain that, like, stores everything like a filing cabinet, and he said, Andrew, and Andrew Lippa got up and went to the piano and played it with no sheet music, and he and I just were like, I literally finished the song, and he went, who? Andrew Lippa went, who are you? And I went, who are you? And that started our love affair. And then a few months later, he called me and he said, I'm writing this new show. Will you come and do a reading of it? And it was The Wild Party. And that's how our whole relationship began. And then I subsequently did Wicked on Broadway. So I met these two men who are so important to me in my life. I met them on the same day, on the same show.
And then he wrote the title song from your solo album, I'm Not Waiting.
He did. He did. And he actually, Andrew, I was doing my very first solo show and before I had ever made the album. And truly, I'm going to say at most 4 days before the show was happening, he called me. He was like, I wrote a song for you. Now, mind you, I already knew what my whole set list was. I didn't ask him to write a song for me. I was already singing some of his music, but I had to put it in. Because he wrote a song for me, so he didn't think. So I put it in. It's called I'm Not Waiting, and then it became the title of the album that I eventually made. Yeah.
Well, it's a wonderful album, too. I was listening to it last night, and so many good performances, but I love your version of Joni Mitchell's A Case of You.
Thank you. Isn't she marvelous? Yeah, she's it. She truly is.
Will there be another album in your future?
I would love to make another album. They are, shall we call, pricey to make.
Mm.
So it's one of those things. Like, I, for several years, I had people asking me if I was going to make an album, and a friend of mine who owned the label that my album actually is on, he said to me, "Don't do it until you're in a show where you can sell it."
Ah, makes sense.
Then you have at least some chance of making your money back. And I was like, okay. And the second that I got Wicked, we basically ran into the studio and made the album. And so we sold it the whole time I was in Wicked. And that was how that one went down. And but I would love to make another one. It's just finding the cash flow for that.
You've also worked with a guy we know well from his work directing a couple shows up here at Penobscot Theater Company, Ethan Pollini, who you worked with at Theater Lab on Baby.
Oh, that's right. That's right, I did. He directed this really interesting, Baby is a show from the early 80s, and it's about three couples in different stages of life who find themselves pregnant. And they took that, and it's a great, lovely show, but it's very what's the word I'm looking for? It's very sort of set in the 80s. Mm. Kind of, it belongs just because of how difficult pregnancies happen now, and how the science is different, the world is different, and so it was. We did like a revival of it with the original writers, and that was incredibly cool to get to do.
I know you went to a school for the arts, and as I mentioned, I work with kids in the arts in high school. How important is arts in education? What does it do for young people, even those who don't go into the arts professionally?
I think the majority of the kids who do high school arts don't go into the arts professionally. I mean, I went to this, quote-unquote, the FAME school in New York City, And that's the majority of people I went to school with didn't go into the arts. But it changes your, first of all, it helps you figure out how to work with other people. It gives you a sense of self, a sense of confidence, a sense of community, a sense of seeing hard work come to fruition and then have the potential to affect other people. And all of that is applicable no matter what you do. And I think it's incredibly important. And I don't think that means that you have to be the kid who's in the play. You can be the kid who is in one play and goes, I don't want to be on stage. But then you become the stage manager, or you become the prop person.
Right.
Or there are so many people that it takes to make a show go. And again, if you never do it again after being in high school, I truly believe it's that kind of stuff. You're hard-pressed to meet someone who doesn't speak fondly of the shows they did in school. You know, they'll be like, oh, I did that show, I loved that show, or whatever it is. It really creates lasting bonds and lasting memories, and I do believe that so much of what you learn in the arts is completely applicable to many, many other vocations.
Julia Murney is appearing alongside this talented newcomer, Kathleen Turner, in the production of A Little Night Music at the Ogunquit Playhouse through the 17th of August. Information, tickets available online at ogunquitplayhouse.org. Julia, what a treat. It's been so much fun talking with you. Thanks for making time for us. And, I hope the summer night smiles for you.
I thank you so much. Such a pleasure talking to you.